The last time we were in this area, quite late at night, we went to the place where Lord Brahma was bewildered, where he had taken the calves and gopas of Lord Krishna. Place of bewilderment. Today, by the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our beloved Acharyas, we have come to the place where Lord Brahma, his pride crushed into powder, came to surrender his head at the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna and offer prayers of love. It is a coughing kirtan. Somehow in Vrindavan even the coughing is quite melodious. It sounds like sweet Vedic ragas. Shall I briefly tell something about this narration? Hearing it in this place has very special purifying effects. It is one of the very special features of being in holy dham is when we come to a particular place where the lila is on the aprakata level, it is happening. Actually, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that even Krishna's prakata lila is eternal, nitya lila. How is that possible? Because of all the unlimited universes, somewhere in material existence, each of Krishna's pastimes is always being enacted. As soon as he finishes killing Putana in one universe, Putana comes into the house of Nanda Maharaj in another universe. As soon as Dhenukasura is whirled around by Balaram and thrown into the tall trees and loses his life in one universe, Dhenukasura is charging at Balaram in another universe. In this way, somewhere his pastimes are always manifesting. So to be in the place where the Lord has his leelas and to absorb our consciousness in hearing that particular narration as it is revealed by the great authorities has a very profound spiritual effect on our hearts. Eagerness to hear is one of the most essential qualifications for spiritual progress. Srila Prabhupada explains that if you're not hungry, you can't really digest food properly. Similarly, if you're not very eager to hear, then the message that we hear doesn't really go and doesn't really digest within our consciousness. Srinbatam svakata krishna punja saravana kirtana rajyantyasato sabhadanami vidunoti suritsitam. Bhagavatam declares that if we're just eager to hear about Krishna, Krishna is so pleased because that eagerness is an expression of love. Krishna is so pleased with our eagerness to hear that from within the heart, he eradicates darkness and removes the anartas, the unwanted things. But how do we develop that eagerness to hear? We must, according to the teachings of Shukadev Goswami, Shushu Shroshada Danasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Syan Mahatsevayavi Prapunya Tiratana Sevana. When we serve great souls, then Krishna is pleased with that service to his devotees. Then he gives us Vasudeva Kataruchi, the eagerness, the taste to hear the messages of Vasudeva. There are 9 processes of devotional service, beginning with sravanam, hearing. Parikshit Maharaj taught us how to hear properly. He was going to die in 7 days, and he didn't spend the last 7 days making out his will to make sure everyone in the family was in the... and nobody would steal away, you know, his properties. Immediately, as soon as he got this notice, he took it as a benediction of the Lord to renounce all material affairs, and he sat on the bank of the Ganges. He vowed not to eat, not to drink, simply to hear about Krishna from the great souls. He didn't even drink a drop of water. When it came to the 10th canto, he was already fasting for many days. But yet he tells Sukadeva Goswami that previously I didn't get water for a few hours and I was so much disturbed that I went into Samik Rishi's house and he didn't give me water properly, so I put a snake on his neck. And then I was cursed to die. But now it's been days and days and days, I haven't had a morsel of food, a drop of water, but I'm not feeling the slightest bit disturbed because I am constantly drinking the ambrosial Ganges of the nectar of Krishna Katha. He was eager to hear. Not only eager to hear, desperate, helpless. It was life and death. He wasn't coming to Bhagavad Katha for some pious credits or for some entertainment, or because he would be socially considered not a very good devotee if he didn't come, or because he has to, because it's the rule of the ashram. And he didn't fall asleep. He understood he was going to die in 7 days. Every word that was coming out of Sukadeva Goswami, he was intensely, helplessly, just taking it to the core of his heart. It was a matter of necessity. He was feeling starving for Harikatha. In other words, it was a matter of life and death for him. Prabhupada told us, Parikshit Maharaj knew he had 7 days to live. And there's not a single one of us who know for sure that we have 7 minutes to live. Correct? It happens all the time. We were just in Ramghat and all those little boys were putting snakes in our faces. There's cobras. They're just putting cobras right in your face, asking for some donation. Yes? I don't know how expert they are at whatever they do to the cobras. Do you really trust these little boys? It is a fact. At any moment, death can strike, and it happens to hundreds and thousands of people every day. Yudhisthira Maharaj told Yaksha, the most incredible, wonderful thing in the world is everyone's dying, but everyone thinks that I will not die for a long time. But actually, Harikatha and Harikirtan, in the association of Vaishnavas, is the only shelter. And we need shelter desperately in this age of Kali. To forget Krishna is worse than death. Vishnu Purana describes like this. The worst tragedy in all the 14 worlds is not for your business to go bankrupt. It's not for your loved one to die. It's not to get some terminal disease. It's not to fail in your exams. It's not for your lover to leave you, as everyone's singing about. The worst disaster in all the 14 worlds, the Vishnu Purana explains, is to forget Krishna for one moment. Because Chanakya Pandit Prabhupada quotes, you cannot bring back that moment for even a second. Ayur harati vaipuncham. Bhagavatam says, for with every rising and setting of the sun, we are one day closer to death. Except those who take pleasure in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. For them, with every rising and setting of the sun, they are one day closer to eternal life. So this is very serious. It's an emergency. Kamala Dala Chala Jivana Talamala. Govinda Das explains, your life, your health, your family, your wealth, your everything in this world, what is the stability of it? Out of illusion we think there's stability. Out of illusion we're thinking that we have created some stability in our lives. But the reality is, it is like a drop of water on the leaf of a lotus. At any moment, it's gone. Bhajahur Haripada. Therefore I want to fix my mind on Lord Hari. I want to worship Lord Hari. It's serious. It's important. Bhakti is much fun when it is practiced, especially with Dinabandhu Prabhu. It's very fun, very enjoyable. But if you really want to find the actual bliss, you have to understand the necessity and surrender to understand the urgent need to desperately take shelter of Harikatha, to take shelter of the association of Vaishnavas, to take shelter of the will of the spiritual masters, and to take shelter of the holy name. So in this spirit, following in the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit, we could actually hear something of Srimad Bhagavatam. One day, Krishna decided he wanted to have breakfast in the forest with the gopas. At this time, he was still in his Kumara Leela, which means he was around 5 years old. So Krishna rose early in the morning and he blew his buffalo horn and all of his friends assembled. This was the day of Lord Balaram's appearance. So Balaram was kept back by Rohini and Yashoda in order to perform nice sacrifices. Very opposite to the way people observe their birthdays today. Usually when it's your birthday, you expect people to give you gifts. Yes? But when Krishna and Balaram, when it was their birthday, according to the spiritual Vedic principles, they would spend the whole day giving gifts to Brahmins and exalted persons, giving gifts, and we give gifts knowing that if we please them, we get their blessings, and that's the ultimate gift. So Rohini Devi kept Balaram back that day because she wanted Balaram to serve the Brahmins and thus receive their blessings. But Krishna entered into the forest with his gopas and calves. There were hundreds and thousands of gopas and unlimited calves. In fact, the word in Srimad Bhagavatam is asankhya. That's how many calves there were. Asankhya means one followed by 17 zeros. Hare Krishna. That's quadrillions. Now you may wonder, how could so many calves be roaming around Vrindavan, which is just a small plot of land? But Krishna has achintya shakti, and his holy dham is none different than him. Factually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that one small portion of Vrindavan dham can accommodate billions of universes, each one 50 million miles in diameter. Hare Krishna. Now, you may think this is very inconceivable, because it is inconceivable. This is achintya shakti. Unless we have faith in Krishna's achintya shakti, we can't really have faith in God. Very well. That's achintya shakti. Nobody even teaches squirrels how to climb. They just know how to do it. Everyone has mystic powers. How is it that this is a neem tree? Yes? Imli town. One little seed from the neem tree is about this big. Yes? And within that little seed is a tree like this that creates so many thousands and thousands of seeds. How is that possible? Can anyone do that? We are seeing the incredible mystic potencies of God at every moment. He is Swarat. He's independent. He can do anything he likes. He can put a billion universes in a mustard seed, and there will be no traffic jams. No overpopulation. Yes? When he lived in Dwarka, one small island, but there were billions of people living on that island. And you don't read about congestion or high-rises. Everybody, there was beautiful palaces and massive flower gardens. If we want to understand God, we must have faith in his achintya shakti, in his inconceivable potencies. So here is Krishna, just a five-year-old little cowherd boy amongst his friends with an asankhya, one followed by 17 zeros of calves. And that's just a rough estimation. And they entered into the forest. Each one had their lunch bag and their bugles and their flutes and their sticks for herding the cows. And Krishna's beauty enthralled everyone's hearts. Complexion like tamal tree. His hair was decorated with beautiful forest flowers, and there was the peacock feather. He had gunja mala around his neck, and then a vajayanti mala, wild forest flowers down below his knees. He had his pitambar, his beautiful golden dhoti. He had rings on his fingers, earrings of precious jewels in his ears. And he was smiling so sweetly, playing his flute. And as he was playing his flute, the older gopis, they were praising that the same lips that drink the milk from Mother Yashoda's breast are now playing this flute so sweetly. As they entered into the forest, each cowherd boy was beautifully decorated. The mothers decorated the cowherd boys with crystal ornaments and gunjamala, as well as pearls and gold. But they weren't so happy with those decorations. When they got into the forest, all the cowherd boys started decorating themselves with leaves and flowers and fruits and peacock feathers and natural minerals they were rubbing all over their bodies. One boy, then they played so many games. Actually, Krishna's lila is the source of all play. All playing has its origin in the spiritual world in Krishna's lila. The playing of this world is just perverted reflection. But Krishna descends into this world out of his causeless mercy just to teach us the real way of playing, where we can experience unlimited eternal happiness. So the boys began to play. Apparently, just like ordinary children, one boy would snatch another boy's lunch bag. And that's very serious amongst the gopas. And the boy would run, give me my lunch bag, give me my... And the boy who had the lunch bag would throw it to another boy, and he'd run there and he'd throw it to another boy, and run there and throw it to another boy, and run there and throw it to another boy. Sometimes they put it in an area where there were all these thorns. And the boy was trying to get to it, and then when he just reached it, he threw it to another boy, and then threw it to another boy, and then it went so far away he didn't know where it was, and the boy would start to cry. And then all the boys would come together and give him his lunch bag back, and then they would dance and sing and have very, very nice fun. Then Krishna would go to a very beautiful scenic place and be looking around. And one boy would say, I will be the first to touch Krishna. And another boy would say, I will be the first to touch Krishna. Another said, no, I will be the first to touch Krishna. And all hundreds and thousands of boys were running to Krishna to touch him first. Arrivo! And by Krishna's powers, every boy could think, I was the first to touch Krishna. The boys were differently engaged. Some were playing horns, buffalo horns. Some were playing flutes. And some were imitating the animals of Braj. First, they would hear the buzzing of the bees, and the boys would imitate the buzzing of the bees. Do we have a microphone for... This is very serious, we have to... Everyone, loudly. Louder. And then they would imitate the very sweet singing sound of cuckoo. Everyone. Cuckoo. They would see birds flying overhead, and they would, with their arms stretched out, they would follow the shadow of the bird and pretend that they were birds. And they would imitate the graceful movements of the swans. and then they would imitate the cracking of the Vrindavan ducks. Everyone. Louder, please. And sometimes they would see ducks sitting silently, and they would sit next to the duck silently. That one I can do. And then they would see the peacocks dancing, and they would dance just like the peacocks. And they would imitate the beautiful song of the peacocks. Thank you. Sometimes they would see baby monkey on a tree with its tail hanging, and they would pull the tail of the baby monkey, and the baby monkey would rah, 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 jump away, and the boys would chase after, pretending to be baby monkey. And other times they'd see grown monkeys sitting on branch of trees with their tails hanging, and the cowherd boys would climb the tails of the monkeys. And then sit next to them. And then the monkey would look at them with a monkey face, and the boys would give them a monkey face back. And then... And the monkey would make his noise, and all the cowherd boys would imitate the, I won't say in Vrindavan, the beautiful song of the monkeys. Everybody, very, very, this should be natural for you. Monkey. And then the monkey would jump to another branch and to another branch and to another branch, and the gopa would jump from branch to branch to branch to branch, just like monkey. Then they would imitate the sweet song of the frogs. And then the frogs would hear them imitating them, and they would become afraid, and they'd leap and leap, and the cowherd boys would leap right next to the frog, and the frog would leap, and the cowherd boy would leap, and the frog would leap, and the cowherd boy would leap, and then the frog would leap into the pond of water, and the cowherd boy would leap into the pond of water. And when they were near a pond of water, they would see their reflections, and they would laugh at their reflections and say joking words against the reflections.
Hey, Sally!
And then they'd all surround, many of them would surround a well, and they'd shout into the well, and the echo would come back, and they would condemn the voice of the echo.
We already did. There's other words they used to.
Sometimes a boy would pretend he was the emperor, and all the other, and many other boys were his subjects. And sometimes they would play games like constables and thieves, where the constables had to catch the thieves and the thieves had to steal from the constables. And they would play with bael fruits and amalaki fruits like balls. Sometimes they would throw stones at the fruits and bring them down and play so many ball games with the fruits of Vrindavan. In this way, the gopas would play with Krishna like ordinary children, whom the impersonalist worship as the source of the supreme Brahman, who the yogis worship as the Paramatma, who the devotees worship as the supreme personality of Godhead. The cowherd boys of Vrindavan played with him just as if he were an ordinary boy. It is described that by Shukadeva Goswami that the cowherd boys had accumulated heaps and heaps and heaps of pious activities, krita punya, to have this opportunity. But the pious activities we're talking about are not activities in the material modes of goodness. They are talking krita punya of activities done in pure devotional service for the pleasure of the Lord. Heaps and heaps and heaps of such activities offered in love for the pleasure of the Lord had given these boys the opportunity to play with Krishna. Such a great fortune. The jnanis, the karmas, the dasya bhaktas, they cannot play with Krishna. Even those who follow the eightfold system of yoga and attain the ultimate goal of samadhi cannot taste even a part of a particle, of a speck of dust of Vrindavan or the lotus feet of Krishna. So we can imagine the good fortune of the Brijbasis who were every day living with Krishna as the most loving friend, child, or lover. On this particular day, Agha appeared. Now, the gopas were so immersed in playing with Krishna, totally absorbed. And their playing with Krishna was so supremely enjoyable that it was impossible for them to stop playing. So therefore, every day, by Krishna's Lila Shakti, a particular demon would come to Vrindavan at lunchtime. Otherwise, they couldn't accept their mother's lunches. They would have just played forever. So on this particular day, the Yogamaya potency, specifically the Lord's Lila Shakti, influenced the heart of Agasura to appear in Vrindavan just at lunchtime. When Agasura saw these cowherd boys having so much fun with Krishna, he could not tolerate it. This is materialistic mentality, that we do not like to see other people having fun, especially when we are miserable. He was so envious seeing the laughing and the joking and the playing and the bliss of the cowherd boys made him so angry. It was intolerable. How could they be enjoying like this? It must be stopped. And in this spirit, he assumed the form of a gigantic python, serpent. He was sent by Kamsa. Agasura was the brother of Putana and Bakasura. and he laid on the pathway of Vrindavan. And he was thinking in his mind that I will avenge the death of my brother and sister. And I will offer as a last offering for their pleasures the sesame seeds and waters of Krishna and all the Brijabasis. Today they will die. This was intention. If I kill Krishna and I kill all the gopas, then in separation all the other Brijabasis will die due to pain. Such an evil, malicious, envious intent. He laid on the road and opened his mouth. He was as thick as a mountain. His body was 8 miles long. Now some of us, we see little snakes, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 feet, yes? Are you afraid? It's like if you go into the fields because you have to respond to nature's call and all of a sudden, psst. Well, be honest, will you be a little afraid? It's little. Agasura was 8 miles long. And he appeared right close to where we're sitting now. And he opened his mouth. His lower lip was on the ground. His higher upper lip was in the clouds. His eyes were blazing red like fire. His tongue was like a broad traffic highway. He had huge teeth that looked like the peaks of mountains. And a horrible wind was pouring out of his mouth every time he exhaled. So the gopas saw this, and first, from a distance, they thought, this is a very scenic spot, let us go and play. And as they came closer, some of the gopas became very afraid, and they started running away, running away, and other boys said, where are you going? Come back, come back, come back. It looks like a snake. No, 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 come back. It's just, Krishna has provided this, just something for we can play with. Then they walked closer. And as they walked closer, they were looking at it. Is it dead or is it alive? And then they came to the conclusion, this is certainly an animal who has come to swallow us. And then they walked closer and they were examining. Look at, his tongue is like a traffic way. His teeth are like mountain peaks. His mouth is like a huge, gigantic cave. And that hot air that is coming out of his mouth is the dead bodies that it has eaten. Hare Krishna. And then they all said, but Krishna will save us. Just like he killed Bakasura, he will save us. We have nothing to fear. Krishna was listening. And Krishna was very much concerned with the welfare of his children. It was his desire to stop them. When he was just about to stop them from going in, one of the boys cried out, let's find out what is within his mouth. And then all the cowherd boys looked at Krishna, smiling, laughing, clapping their hands. They all ran into the mouth of Agasura with their calves following. Now the demigods who drink nectar, which is supposed to make you immortal, every day they were terrified with fear of Agasura because he was so cruel and so powerful. But the gopas, they didn't have vajras and clubs. They didn't have powerful positions and armies like the demigods. But they had no fear. Why? Bajahure mana srinanda nandana abhaya charanara vindare Ajahure mana srimandanandana abhaya charana radhendare dulabamana vajanama satsange taraha eva vosindare
dulabamana vajanama satsange
Prabhupada gives an example that in the very Hare Krishna, in the very strong current of the river, the elephant is the most powerful animal on the face of the earth. Yes, when it describes Bhima or Kamsa, it doesn't describe that they have the strength of 10,000 goats. It's always 10,000 elephants. Yes? Why? Because elephant is the strongest beast on earth. I've seen with my own eyes at Guru Vayur. I was watching those elephants, and I just saw an elephant. Just effortlessly, and this is just a small little elephant, just effortlessly just wrap its trunk around a tree and pull it right out from its roots and throw it. Now what human being can do that? Elephants are strong. But when the elephant goes into the rushing river, it's washed away to its death because the current is too powerful for it.
But then we have
the tiny little fish. Little fish this big. It's swimming upstream. It's swimming downstream. It's swimming across stream. With no fear. Why? Because although if you put an elephant and a little tiny fish in a wrestling arena together, who's going to win? The elephant will just go boom in a second. You'll never know the fish even existed. But because the fish has taken shelter of the river, the fish is completely free to swim anyway in that river. But because the elephant has not learned to take shelter, fear and death come before him when he goes against the current. Prabhupada's father gave him the name Abhaycharan, one who is fearless because he has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. This world is full of fear. At every moment, something can come upon us. But when we take shelter of Krishna, Bhakti Vinod prays, Krishna, if you want to kill me, then kill me. If you want to protect me, you can protect me. I'm your servant. Deal with me in any way you please. When we have faith in Krishna, we become fearless. And these little gopas, who were nothing physically or mentally compared to the demigods in the worldly sense, just laughed and smiled and ran into the mouth of Agasura. Now our acharyas explain, Krishna wanted to stop them, but he couldn't. Why is that? Because Krishna is controlled by the love of his devotee. Krishna is subordinate to the desire of his pure devotees. Krishna wanted to stop them, and the gopas wanted to be saved by him, and the gopas won. So after they were in the mouth of Agasura, Agasura kept his mouth waiting. He was waiting for Govinda. And Krishna was thinking, how am I going to kill this demon without harming my friends? And he thought for a moment, and then he entered into the mouth of Agasura. And then Agasura closed the mouth. And the demigods were in terrible fear. They started crying out very loudly, "Alas! Alas!
Alas!"
And Kamsa had his spies everywhere. When Kamsa heard that Krishna has been swallowed by the all-powerful Agasura, they were rejoicing, they were having festivals, they were crying out words of jubilation. And meanwhile, Krishna, he's listening. And Krishna did not like to hear the demons so jubilant. So Krishna began to grow and grow and grow until he occupied the entire space within the massive demon Agasura's mouth. And Agasura, to counteract the effect, he began to grow, and Krishna grew, and he grew, and Krishna grew, and he grew, and Krishna grew to such an enormous size that he completely blocked all possibility for any air to circulate in Agasura's mouth, and Agasura was just bursting, 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 his eyes were rolling, and then he suffocated, and his spirit soul just burst from the top of his head into the sky. Agasura was dead. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki! Now, why did Krishna do that? He never did that before in his leelas. Because Krishna never wanted to disturb the sweetness of his relationships with his devotees. Just like Vamanadev. When he had to take three steps, he enlarged himself to such a massive degree that two steps cover the universe. But when Krishna had to kill Sakatasura, he didn't do anything like that. He just remained a tiny little baby, 3 months old, and just with his little small lotus-like foot, which is tender as a newly formed tamal leaf, he just kicked. And the ghostly asura, Sakata, was dead. Yes. And because he remained just as a little helpless baby, it didn't disturb the vatsalya feelings of love of his parents or any of the cowherd men or women. Similarly with Putana. When Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the universe and offending Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Narasimhadev came out of the pillar in a gigantic, massive form. And he had his nails that were harder than thunderbolts, and he ripped Hiranyakashipu apart. Now, Putana was every bit as powerful as Hiranyakashipu. Yes? Even though she was a lady? But Krishna didn't expand in size. She expanded to 12 miles high. But he just remained a little baby, just a couple days old. And he just sucked and sucked and sucked and with his little tiny... How big are the fingers of a child that is 3 years old? Did you ever look at the face? Sometimes I see the fingers of little babies. They're so small and so soft. You're just afraid they're going to break at any second. Yes? And Krishna had a little tiny butt fingers. He just squeezed. Ah, leave me, child! Leave me! Leave me! Ah! She was in mortal pain. But Krishna did not change his size, because if he did, he would have disturbed the sweet feelings of affection of the Brijabasis. Because Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is Rasaraj. So why did he grow like this and reveal such opulences? The reason is because when Agasura closed his mouth, all the gopas and all the calves became unconscious. some commentators say that they all died. Why? Because it was so dark, they couldn't see Krishna, they couldn't maintain their lives, and there was no air either. So they were all laying unconscious, and the mouth was closed so nobody else could see. So in this way, there was no one to disturb the rats with. The gopas were unconscious, everyone else was outside, they didn't know what was going on inside. So Krishna killed the demon as he would ordinarily kill demons. Just... And when Agasura died, his mouth opened. And Krishna glanced with a gaze of love upon all of his friends and calves, and they came back to life. They were astonished. They were all looking around and smiling at one another. They were in this massive serpent's belly. Then they came out. And when Krishna came out with the gopas, the light of Agasura's spirit soul, which was floating in the sky in a form of light, merged into the body of Krishna. And our acharyas explain, in fact, Srimad Bhagavatam explains that he had attained Sarupya Mukti, which means he didn't just get liberation like most demons. He was elevated to Vaikuntha, to have a forearm form, this similar to the Lord's himself, and be in eternal loving service to the Lord. He attained the perfection of life. Now, several important things are to be understood in this way. One is, generally you don't see the soul in the form of light, but Krishna made that soul effulgent because he wanted everyone to know what type of liberation Agasura was giving, out of compassion. Also, Krishna... Krishna reciprocates according to how you approach him. So Agasura let Krishna in his body. So Krishna let Agasura in his body. This is reciprocation. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki. But more important, even though Agasura was such a cruel, violent demon, when the cowherd boys were in his belly, they enjoyed it like a playground. Ajata Sukriti. He actually gave fun to the cowherd boys. For them it was ecstatic. It was ecstatic running into his mouth and playing in his belly. Because he gave pleasure to the cowherd boys, their association changed his heart. And he actually felt pleasure in the cowherd boys' association. Why? Because he gave pleasure to them. That was the reciprocation of the Lord, that he could actually appreciate the association of great souls because he did some service for them, even unknowingly. And therefore, when Krishna entered into his mouth and into his mind, for the last moment of his life, Agasura was feeling some ecstasy. He was favorable to Krishna. Therefore, when he gave up his life in that state, he was qualified for elevation to Vaikuntha, eternal loving service of the Lord. And the Bhagavatam describes, just see, Agasura, because he had Krishna in his body and in his mind, even though he was such a demon, he attained Swarupya Mukti, spiritual perfection. What to speak of those who in a favorable way are always remembering Krishna by hearing his glories and chanting his holy name. When Agasura was dead, the demigods were so relieved. They were showering flowers upon Krishna. And the apsaras and the gandharvas were singing and dancing, and conch shells were blowing, and kettle drums were playing. And Brahma came to see what type of festival was taking place. Now, Parikshit Maharaj was very curious. He asked Shukadeva Goswami, why is it that Krishna killed Agasura when he was Kumar Lila, and 1 year later, when he was in his Poganda Lila, the cowherd boys told the Brijavasis this story as if it happened the same day? I don't understand. Can you explain this to me? Now we will begin today's lecture. That was introductory. But first, Agasura represents the mentality of cruelty to others, causing trouble to others due to envy. Sometimes, even as devotees, we have this asuric tendency represented by aga, that we actually, whether we like it or don't like it, we cause trouble to others. We want to see other people suffer. We don't want to see other people succeed. Now, what does Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teach a Vaishnava is? Srila Prabhupada quotes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the previous acharyas that what a Vaishnava means is that our happiness is to see others' happiness, and our distress is to see others' distress. Para dukkha dukkhi. If we're actually developing the real qualities of a devotee, a Vaishnava, then our greatest joy will be to see someone else making spiritual progress, to see someone else receiving the mercy of the Lord, to see someone else being empowered by the Lord. When Lord Chaitanya was glorifying Haridas Thakur as if he had 1,000 mouths, all the devotees were in ecstasy. No one was thinking, why is he not saying something about me? No. When the devotees saw Lord Chaitanya gave supreme mercy to King Prataparudra, they were rejoicing. They were happier than happy could be because they were seeing someone else getting special mercy. But in the Mahaprakash Lila at Sri Vasangam, every single devotee was getting all his desires fulfilled. Every single devotee Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving such mercy to. He was showing them the form that they worshipped. He showed Kolavecha Sridhar, Krishna Balaram. He showed Murari Gupta, Ramchandra with Sita Lakshman and Hanuman. Every desire every devotee had for spiritual perfection, he was profusely showering upon them. But he would not call Mukunda Dutt. And this was the end of Mahaprakash Lila. And every single devotee was practically dying with their hearts in pain because Mukunda Dutt was suffering. They didn't care anything for all the benedictions and all the perfections they achieved, but everyone was crying because Mukunda Dutt was not getting mercy. That is Vaishnava. Vaishnava means without false ego. Vaishnava means to find happiness in others' happiness. To find the greatest bliss in seeing others making spiritual progress, getting empowered and becoming objects of the Lord's mercy. Not, why not me? That is mentality. So the Agasura mentality is to cause trouble to others and make them suffer due to envy in our heart. And also Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the Agasura mentality is also the unwillingness to help others by giving them Krishna consciousness. Because if we have a chance to give someone Krishna consciousness, but we do not, that's violence. That's a type of cruelty. So being instruments of compassion and cleaning our hearts and helping others to do the same, that is the true path of perfection. Now, how to overcome this Agasura tendency within our hearts? By really praying and striving to be instruments of compassion of Guru and the Vaishnavas and the Acharyas. And try to access mercy that we can share with others through our own spiritual disciplines. Hearing the glories of the Lord, worshipping the deity, serving the Vaishnavas, and especially in a humble state of mind, like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, eager to offer all respects for others without expecting any in return. In that state of mind, we can access the mercy of the Lord when we chant the holy name. Parikshit Maharaj was very curious. How is this possible? A year goes by, and they're telling the story about Agasura as if it happened the same day. Can you explain this to me? And Shukadeva Goswami was so very happy that your eagerness to hear, you're so attached to hearing the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. And every time you hear, the taste is getting newer and newer and newer. This is the quality of a Paramhamsa. A Paramhamsa is attached to the essence of life, which is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And as we make spiritual advancement, the more we hear about Krishna, the sweeter it becomes. Now I know many of you have heard this story many times before, and some of you are spacing out, thinking, I know the story. I already know what's going to happen next. I want to hear something new. But actually, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's names are ever new. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us in the role of a devotee. When he was at Tota Gopinath temple in Puri, he would go to hear Gadadhar Pandit speak Srimad Bhagavatam. And when he would hear the story of Dhruva Maharaj, now this is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's come with the bhava of Srimati Radharani. When he would hear the story of Dhruva Maharaj, and he would hear the story of Prahlad Maharaj, he would have Gadadhar Pandit recite it 100 times again and again and again and again, and taste newer and newer and more ecstatic feelings each time. Before he would go on to the next story, he would hear Dhruva's story 100 times. Before going on to the next story, he would hear the entire Prahlad Leela 100 times. Immersed in the taste, tears pouring from his eyes. That's the sign that we're actually making spiritual advancement. If we take Krishna's pastimes or Krishna's teachings to be something material, then we hear it a few times and it doesn't interest us anymore. But if we're actually experiencing Krishna, every time we hear the same narration, we're tasting more and more bliss. We're getting more realizations. Krishna reveals himself. Srila Prabhupada, he would quote this verse that yesterday Dinabandhu Prabhu quoted. Dehino svinyatha dehe komarom yuvanam chara
atha dehantara praptir dhirastatra
nivyur. Yes. But Prabhupada, how many times did he quote that sloka? But every time he did it with such enthusiasm. Now recently one devotee was saying, I can't preach like that. It just doesn't interest me. But Prabhupada, who's an eternal resident of Vrindavan, who has descended from Goloka Vrindavan to preach in this world, when he chants, Dehino smin yatha dehe, his love for Krishna is pouring out. Because it's Krishna's words. It's Krishna's love, it's Krishna's compassion upon the living entities that he speaks this. How could we ever say this sloka enough? Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita out of his compassion and love for all living beings. These are his words, and his words are none different than him. So every time Prabhupada would chant this most fundamental sloka of Bhagavad Gita, he did it with so much love and compassion and enthusiasm. And the rest of us, I know that sloka. But if we have a taste for Krishna, we have a taste for Krishna. It's not that we always need something new, something else, something more mystical. That is a material conception. If we're actually taking shelter, if we're actually experiencing Krishna, we will be in bliss. It's newer and newer and newer. So Shukadev Goswami was praising Maharaj Pariksha, because you are so enthusiastic to hear. I am becoming energized by you and more and more and more enthusiastic to speak. And Shukadev Goswami explains, when there's Hari Katha, three people get benefited. The speaker, the one who's inquiring, and everyone that's listening. Your questions are glorious, Pariksit Maharaj, because they pertain to the subject matter of Krishna. Therefore, they are for the ultimate benefit for all living beings. Then Sukadev Goswami answered Maharaj Pariksit's question. After Krishna killed Agasura, he and his friends were quite hungry, because, you know, being in serpents' mouths, quite exciting. And it's also very late for lunch. So Krishna said, let us go to the bank of Yamuna to take our lunch today. And Krishna took them to a very, very beautiful scenic spot. And he said to the gopas, just see these soft, beautiful, fine sands. that we can sit on very comfortably. And there are so many beautiful trees of all descriptions with fragrant flowers, and the breeze of these flowers is very intoxicating. And the cuckoos are singing, and the birds are making beautiful songs as well. Let us sit in this very scenic spot and take our lunch today on the bank of Yamuna. So they all sat down. Krishna was in the center, and all the gopas were like petals of a lotus with Krishna as the whirl. There were first 8 gopas around Krishna, and then there were 16, and then there were 32, and more and more and more and more. It was a beautiful sight. And everyone was so happy. Then Krishna, by his Sarva Sankalpata Shakti, performed an incredible deed. Every single gopa, and there were hundreds and thousands of them who were sitting in circles around Krishna, every single gopa had his eyes gazing upon the beautiful form of Gopal. And each one of them was thinking that Krishna's only looking at me. And he didn't expand himself in any way. He just sat as one little Krishna, 5 years old, on a lotus flower. It appeared that way, on the bank of Yamuna, actually. And each gopa, in all the directions around, was thinking, all of Krishna's limbs are faced only toward me, and his eyes are gazing so lovingly upon me. Therefore, he energized all his friends with so much happiness. Srila Prabhupada, in this regard, explains, this is what Krishna conscious society means, that we keep Krishna's pleasure in the center. When we all are working together for Krishna's pleasure, then there can be deep, loving friendships amongst all of us. Forever. In the material world, as soon as any other principle becomes the center of our ambition, then potentially friends can be enemies. Love can turn into hate. But if we follow in the footsteps of the gopas of Vrindavan and always keep Krishna in the center of all our interrelationships, then our friendship and love will eternally grow deeper and sweeter. So, the gopas, they all took out their lunch bags. And they had so much fun. They wanted to enjoy prasad in very special ways. They weren't concerned with whatever utensils their parents gave them. So they made so many other types of plates. Some were eating prasad by making their own laps their plates. Some were making plates out of leaves, and some were making plates out of flowers. Some were making their plates and putting their prasad on fruits. Some were making their plates out of the bark of trees, and some were putting all their prasad on rocks. And in this way, they were very much playful and very much enjoying, and they were taking each preparation out and showing it to each other. Like, look, I have ladu, ah! And everyone, oh, I have samosa, oh, I have gulab jamun, I have this nice sabji. And they were showing each other, and they tasted, and when they liked what they had, oh, this tastes so good, hey Saka, hey Krishna, Supal, Sri Dhamma, Stoka Krishna, taste this! And he'd take it out of his mouth and give it to Krishna. And Krishna would take it and eat it. Oh, very nice. And they were all sharing from each other's mouths. Now, according to the rules and regulations, if you want to offer something to Krishna, mantra, tantra, yantra, puja, mudra, all these things. But the gopas did not do any of that. They were taking the food right out of their mouths. Hey, Saka Krishna, eat this. It's very good. And Krishna, oh, very good. And they were sharing prasad. And they were laughing and playing so many games with each other. One gopa opened up a samosa, emptied out the filling and put jasmine flowers inside, then closed it.
and then pretended to eat a piece and said to one of the other gopas, "Oh, Saka, you should taste this samosa. It's very, very good." And then then everybody would be watching. Because only that person knew, didn't know. And then he would bite into the samosa, make a very, very difficult face after eating something very bitter. And then all the hundreds and thousands of gopas would laugh. And then the boy who ate the jasmine flowers would run after the boy who gave it to him, and he'd start playfully beating him, and the other boy would run away, and then they'd all laugh very happily. Another time, a boy said, "Oh, I have something very sweet, very good my mother has given me. Close your eyes, open your mouth." They said this to Krishna. Yes, so Krishna closed his eyes and opened his mouth, and they put a flower in his mouth. And then Krishna made a really beautiful face of what happens when you eat a flower. And everyone was laughing, laughing, laughing. Then a bee was buzzing around Krishna's lotus-like face. And Krishna said to the bee, "Hey bee, why are you whirling around my face? You should go to Madhu Mangal's face. There you will actually drink nectar." So then the bee went and started whirling around Madhu Mangal's face, and Madhu Mangal, "Hey Saka, hey Krishna, what are you doing? Why did you send this bee to me? Do you want this bee to bite me?" And then he addressed the bee, "Hey bee, hey bee, are you not afraid of killing a Brahmin?" And all the gopas would laugh and laugh and laugh. And another boy would see some monkeys in the sides. And he'd say, hey monkey, I see you're very, very hungry. Well, that particular cowherd boy, that particular gopa, he has very good prasad. If you steal it, you'll be very satisfied. In this way, so many loving games like ordinary children. Krishna is Yajna Bhuk. Which means, ultimately, all sacrifices and offerings in the Vedic rituals are offered to him. He accepts our offerings when they are done with proper mantra, tantra, yantra, puja, and mudra. But here, today, the Yajna Bhuk, the supreme enjoyer of all Vedic sacrifices, is enjoying with his friends, eating the food right out of their own mouths as a spontaneous exchange of love. Why? Because the gopas, they know no one but Krishna. And therefore Krishna knows no one but his devotees. Because the gopas, 100% of their lives were exclusively, their minds, bodies, words, and souls were only for Krishna's happiness. Thus, Krishna accepted the offerings right out of their mouths with millions and millions and millions of times more pleasure than even when the goddess was a fortune offer bhoga to Narayan in Vaikuntha. As they were eating, Krishna told the gopas that we should just relax and let the calves drink the water of Yamuna and eat the nice fresh grasses. The grasses were greener and very luscious, and they allured the calves to go farther and farther and farther away. Suddenly, in the middle of this supremely enjoyable lunch pastime, the gopas realized, all the calves are gone. They became very much afraid. So they cried out, "Krishna, Krishna!" And as soon as they cried out Krishna's name, all their fear disappeared. Because they were chanting offenselessly with pure love. And Krishna responds to his devotees chanting his names. Krishna said, you all continue enjoying eating lunch prasad. I will go myself and find the calves. There's no reason for you to do anything else. You just stay here and enjoy. I will go. And Krishna, who was holding in his hand a lump of food made out of yogurt, rice, and fruit. And it was just within his very, very soft, delicate, lotus-like fingers. He roamed to search for the calves. He looked in the mountains and in the caves and in the forest, but could not find them anywhere. Brahma wanted to see Krishna's powers. When Brahma saw how Krishna killed Agasura and gave him Sarupya Mukti, he was astonished, really astonished. And then after seeing him perform such an immense deed, when he saw him sitting with the cowherd boys, joking and laughing and eating food right from his friends' mouths, that really bewildered Brahma. Because Brahma Loka, they don't do things like that. You know, the worship of the Lord has to be done very, very punctually and very efficiently. So he, who is this Krishna? What is that? He was bewildered, astonished. So he decided that he wanted to see Krishna do something very wonderful. And he also wanted to test him. So Brahma displayed his mystical potencies. And he thought that he stole all the calves. And Krishna knew this. Krishna knows everything. But he was pretending not to know it. He was searching and looking and calling for his calves, and he couldn't find them anywhere. And then he returned to the bank of the Yamuna, and all the cowherd boys were gone. Brahma thought that he took them also. And Krishna just pretended to be like a distressed actor, just to further bewilder Lord Brahma. But our acharyas explain, Lord Brahma has no power to influence the Leela of the Lord. He has no power to do anything to Krishna's eternal associates. Therefore, what happened is Krishna had Yoga Maya put all the original cowherd boys and calves to sleep. And then keeping them in the same place they were, she hid them so no one could see them. They were sleeping and hidden. And instantly, at that same moment, Mahamaya created identical cowherd boys and calves. And those are the ones Brahma stole. And he put them in a cave and by his mystic power in sleep. So evening was coming. And Krishna did not want to cause disturbance to the mothers of all the calves and gopas. And also he knew the hearts of all of them. Every cow in Vrindavan and every elderly gopi in Vrindavan, they loved, honored, and served Yashoda Mai, because she had the supreme fortune of being the mother of Krishna. All the cows and all the older gopis, they all had motherly affection for Krishna. In fact, every gopi and every cow loved Krishna more than they love their own children. Now, Parikshit Maharaj, when he heard this, this was unbelievable to him. It's impossible. It's completely against the laws of human nature. If you have a child, your mother's, if you have a child, and not very well behaved, not getting very good grades in school, and your neighbor's child, very good grades in school, very well behaved, much better looking, do you love your neighbor's child more than your own? It's impossible. Impossible. So Parikshit Maharaj was asking Sukadeva Goswami, how is it possible that the gopis could love somebody else's child more than their own? And Sukadeva Goswami explained, because Krishna is the life of all lives. He is this, every living entity is part and parcel of Him. He is the supreme source of all love. He is the supreme object of all love. And we can only love someone else because they are part and parcel of Krishna. He is the life within everyone's heart. So Krishna understood the desire. Each cow and each gopi was thinking in the core of their hearts, how fortunate is Yashoda Mai. Oh, how we wish we could also serve Krishna and please Krishna like Mother Yashoda as mother. They were not envious. They simply had that love. And Krishna wanted to fulfill those devotees' desires. Thus, by his Vasudeva expansion, he expanded himself to be identical to every want of that asankhya of calves. That means he expanded himself as one followed by 17 zero calves and hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys. Harivo. And each expansion, which was Krishna himself, had exact bodily features, exact voice, exact mannerisms, behavior, exact same relationships with everyone else, and was wearing the same ornaments, the same clothes, had the same flute and the same stick. Krishna expanded himself in all those ways. As their sticks and their flutes and their ornaments and their clothes, everything. And then Krishna, in the form of all the calves and the gopas, entered into the village of Braj. And they all played their flutes. And when they played their flutes, now everyone's flute was as sweet as Krishna's flute. And the mothers would hear their children's flutes. They were overwhelmed. Their hearts were just over flooding with parental affection for their children. Their children came into the house and they just embraced them and put them on their laps and started feeding their children their milk. And like never before, just milk that was like nectar was flowing from their breast. And Krishna, in the form of each gopa, was just drinking and drinking and drinking. And the mothers were feeling more and more ecstasy than they ever felt before. Now you may ask the question, if Krishna was exactly identical to each cowherd boy, then why did they feel more ecstasy than their own cowherd boys? Because Krishna was reciprocating with their love. Because their love was so intense for Krishna. Although Krishna is the controller of all controllers, he is controlling from Brahma down to the insignificant blade of grass. But Krishna has one supreme quality. He is subordinate to and under the control of the prem of those who love him with spontaneous devotion. Therefore, as the gopis were feeding their milk to Krishna, their love conquered him, and he actually forgot his opulences and became completely dependent upon them as their own child. Krishna, not just as an act, but for real, Krishna was subordinate, dependent on each mother as their own children, because he was conquered by their love. And every day, the gopis' love for Krishna was increasing and increasing and increasing. And even they were wondering that we always loved Krishna more than our own children. But now we love our children as much as we love Krishna. And not only that, we love Krishna and our children more than we ever did before. Because Krishna was reciprocating. The gopis, each night when their little boys would come home with ecstatic parental affection, they would bathe them, and then they would massage their bodies with fragrant oils. Then they would anoint their bodies with sandalwood paste. Then they would put nice, they would dress them with their own hands. And they would put ornaments. And then they would cook for them and feed them, and put them to rest. Krishna fulfilled the innermost ambition of his devotees. And when the calves would come before their mothers, the mothers would be in ecstasy. When the mothers saw their little calves that were none different, that were actually Krishna, tears would flow from their eyes. Just seeing their calves, milk would just pour out of parental love. Please understand, this is not just a biological thing, milking coming out of the gopis and cows' udders. This is their love. This is their pure ecstatic prem being offered to the Lord in the form of ambrosial milk. And Krishna tasted the milk of those cows and tasted the milk of those gopis as pure nectar. He couldn't stop drinking it and they couldn't stop giving it. The cows would see their calves and start to cry. And the calves, Krishna would be so hungry for their milk in the form of the calves, he would just very enthusiastically drink it and drink it. And meanwhile, the cows, just overwhelmed with motherly affection, would just lick the bodies of their little calves and lick them and lick them and lick them. They couldn't stop licking their calves. It seemed like they were swallowing them. Out of their intense love. And the cows, in ecstasy, as their little calves were drinking their milk, they were loudly mooing. Yes, the gopis' praying made Krishna forget all of his powers. He became completely dependent upon them as their children. And this is not a fault. This is a supreme ornament of Krishna's characteristics. When a living being becomes dependent on Maya, it brings sorrow. But when Krishna depends on the love of his devotee, it brings ever-increasing bliss. Thus, the love increased every day for one full year. About 5 or 6 days before the end of the year, Krishna and Balaram were herding the calves with the gopas, and the calf. Huh? This cow is very eager for this story. Sometimes when we're speaking, Dinabandhu Prabhu makes sounds like that when he hears something nice. He goes, Now, the elder cowherd men were on the top of the Govardhan Hill, herding cows. And Krishna was with the calves and Balaram at the bottom of the hill. When the mother cows saw their calves, they became so overwhelmed with motherly love, it became uncontrollable. They just started running down the hill. Not like cows usually, but their legs, two in the front and two in the back. Dinabandhu Prabhu will show. like this. They were, and their udders were so big and so full, there was literally profuse milk just pouring out of their udders, and their udders were just going back and forth and back and forth, and they were leaping and running and literally galloping down Govardhan Hill, and there's so many rocks and stones and everything, and the cowherd men were trying to stop them, but they couldn't. They felt very angry and ashamed that they were not able to control the cows. So they went chasing after them. With great effort, they got to the bottom of Govardhan Hill. Meanwhile, the cows started just licking and licking and licking their calves, and the calves started drinking and drinking and drinking the nectar of the love of their milk. And this was strange, because the young calves were kept back in the Goshala. These were not their newborn calves. These were the calves that they gave birth to the time before. And generally a mother never gives milk to the older calf. She gives milk to the one that's newborn. But these cows had no concern with the newborn calves. They wanted to give all their milk to the old calves. Because it was Krishna. And the cowherd men couldn't understand, why are they giving all their milk to these calves? And they were so disturbed. They came down the hill, and meanwhile the cows were just mooing and mooing and licking and just pouring their milk in these calves' mouths. And Krishna was drinking and drinking and drinking in each calf. And the cowherd boys were very the cowherd men were very despondent until they saw their children, who were all Krishna. As soon as they saw their children, tears started pouring from their eyes, and parental affection just erupted like volcano in their heart. They just picked up their children, embraced them, smelled their heads, and wept, and forgot all about all difficulties. And after some time of just showering their love upon their children, intoxicated, they called the cows back, and they went back into the forest. But as they thought of their children, they incessantly wept tears of affection. Now when Balaram saw this, he was really astonished. Because as you know, it was his birthday when Krishna performed this lila of becoming all the calves and the gopas. He wasn't there. So how is it possible that Balaramji, who was omniscient and all-powerful, did not know? Would you like to know the answer?
No!
Because Krishna covered Balaram. And everyone in Vrindavan over by Yoga Maya, so nobody knew that he actually manifested as every calf and cowherd boy. The reason he covered Balaram over is because he knew if Balaram understood that his friends like Sridhama and Subal and Arjuna and Ujvala, if he knew that he would be separated from them for a full year, he would have suffered terribly. So Krishna did not want Balaram to suffer at all. Therefore, he covered Balaram by Yoga Maya, so he thought that all of his cowherd boyfriends were he was playing with every day. But when Balaram saw this, he started to contemplate, how is this possible? These cows have been feeding their older calves for a whole year, and I've been seeing it, but I never even recognized it. And not only that, but for the whole year I've been seeing that the gopis and the elder gopas, they're loving their children the same way they love Krishna. They used to love Krishna more than any of their children. Now they love their children just like they love Krishna. In fact, even me, I love every calf, and I love every cowherd boy, just like I love Krishna. For a whole year. But why didn't I think about why? It must be Yoga Maya. Krishna has covered me with Yoga Maya. But now I understand for sure that every calf and every gopa is an expansion of Govinda. Otherwise, this cannot be possible. Then Balaramji asked Krishna, please tell me, what is this phenomena? And Krishna explained everything, how on your birthday, just to give pleasure to the gopas, to the gopis, to the cows, and even to Lord Brahma, I have done like this. So in this way, a full year passed. But for Brahma, one day is a whole yuga cycle. 1,000 whole yuga cycles, which is 4,320,000,000 years, is a day of Brahma. So a moment for Brahma is a year by our calculation. So Brahma understood he was playing with Krishna. So he didn't want to stay away too long. He came back in a moment. But knowing that it was a year by our calculations. So Brahma returns. And it happened to be Balaram's birthday when he returned. Exactly a year. And he saw there were all the gopas and there's all the calves playing, eating, enjoying, just like any day. What is this? And he looked in his cave and he saw that all the calves and gopas were in mystic slumber. And then he looked back and he saw identical. They were playing with Krishna. And he went back and forth. He what is happening? What is happening? He was thinking, are these the real ones and these are illusory ones? Or maybe these are the real ones and these are the illusory ones. Is Krishna such a mystic that every time I go to the cave, he puts them there, and every time I come back, he puts them here? Brahma was trying to figure out how could they be here and there at the same time, simultaneously. Brahma tried to mystify Krishna, and therefore Krishna mystified Brahma. He became completely disoriented and bewildered. He couldn't figure out what was happening. And then one of the cowherd boys just looked at Brahma and said to him, "Oh, Aja." Ajam has two meanings. It means the unborn one, and it means a goat. Now Brahma was right there amongst them, just looking, trying to figure it out, and the gopas and the calves were just completely ignoring him. They cared nothing for this Brahma. Then one gopa finally looked at him and said, "Brahma, you goat, you have created the universe with your intelligence, but you cannot bewilder us. Just look and see." And at that instant, every calf and every gopa manifested a four-arm form, the color of a rain cloud, each one with Kostubha Mani and beautiful crowns and ornaments. And each one of those forms, which was manifested from each calf and cowherd boy, had all living beings circled around it, worshiping it. He saw millions. There were millions of boys and calves, and each one, there was a four-headed Brahma, and there was all living entities of the universe, and there was the 24 elements of material energy, and there was all the mystic cities, and all the mystic opulences, everything, all worshiping. And when Brahma saw that, he was like a clay doll, absolutely stunned and motionless. He couldn't think, he couldn't move. He was just practically paralyzed in a state of total bewilderment. And he was in that condition for some time. And then whatever ego he had of being the creator of the universe was destroyed. And then all of a sudden, everything disappeared. And then what did Brahma see? He saw Vrindavan. Previously, he could not see Vrindavan. But after going through this intense exercise of purification, he lost his ego of being a creator. He became completely humbled. And in that humble state, he saw the river Yamuna as a river of liquid prema. He saw all the trees as the most opulent desire trees. He saw the dust of Braj as Chintamani, every particle more precious than all the wealth of Brahmaloka and Vaikuntha. He saw the beauty of Vrindavan. He saw that Vrindavan was a place where there was no hunger, where there was no thirst, where there was no anger, and where even living and even species of life and living beings who are naturally inimical to each other they are lifelong friends, sharing sweet love and exchanges. Because Krishna is in the center. That is Vrindavan. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was wandering through Jarikanda forest, he had the tigers chant Hare Krishna, and he had the deers chant Hare Krishna. And they were all in such ecstasy, centered around loving Krishna, that the tigers and deers, who are naturally enemies, were embracing and kissing. Huh? Did you ever see a tiger and a deer embrace and kiss out of love with tears of ecstasy in their hearts? And Lord Chaitanya remembered this sloka of Lord Brahma. This is what he saw. He saw Vrindavan revealed before his own eyes. And there, in the center of it all, was Gopal. Just as he was 1 year before, standing all alone with a lump of yogurt, fruit, and rice in his hand, looking for the calves and the gopas. Lord Brahma realized, who is this little five-year-old boy who's herding the cows? He's the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. And what mercy he has given. Lord Brahma descended on his swan carrier to this place where we are sitting today. Now, usually the demigods, out of their pride, they will never touch the surface of the earth planet. This is a rule. They'll always be a little above the earth because it's below their dignity to touch the earth. But Brahma was in such a humble position, he just cast away all these rules and etiquette and fell flat like a rod on the earth of Sri Braj Bhumi in the very dust that we are sitting today. Again and again and again and again and again, Lord Brahma fell to the ground in ecstasy. Lord Brahma considered himself completely insignificant. He considered his existence to be like snow at night. Huh? Now, I don't know how much of you know about snow. But snow is very bright in the day. But at night, you can't even see it. And at night, a glowworm, a firefly, thinks he's illuminating all directions. But in the presence of the sun, the glowworm, or firefly, realizes I am utterly insignificant. Lord Brahma realized that no one can understand Krishna. No one can estimate the power and the supreme opulences, or in Vrindavan, the supreme unexcelled sweetness of Krishna. All we can do is surrender. No one's intelligence can fathom the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is only through surrender that Krishna reveals himself as he is. Brahma, who the four Vedas emanate from his mouth, realized that he didn't know anything. And he fell on the ground in total submission and surrendered to Krishna. Again and again and again. It was very difficult for him to see Krishna because there were so many torrents of tears falling from his eyes, tears of love. It is described that he has eight eyes, but he could only see Krishna with two, because he had two hands to wipe two eyes, but the other eyes were too filled with tears to see anything. There's that beautiful sloka. Let those who fear material existence worship the Vedas, the Mahabharata, and other such literatures. But I will worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Absolute Truth is crawling like a helpless child. Lord Brahma, his voice was faltering, his limbs were trembling, and he offered beautiful prayers of surrender to Krishna at this place. Yes, this is the place where the greatest scholar, the most powerful manager, the wealthiest, what do you call the wealthiest multi-trillionaire, the wealthiest man, the most learned man, the oldest man. He's senior in every respect. What is our position compared to Brahma? You may think I have some money, but what is your wealth compared to Brahma's in Brahmaloka? You may think you have a big family, but every living entity is the offspring of Brahma within this universe. You may think you have knowledge, but all knowledge is ultimately coming from Brahma in this universe. In every way, Lord Brahma is billions and trillions of times superior to anyone on this earth. But here, the name of this place is?
Chomua.
Chomua, also Chomat. At this place of Chomua, Lord Brahma, the father of all living beings, the controller of the universe, has come down to put his head at the feet of the little cowherd boy Gopal. And Lord Brahma's eight eyes incessantly bathed Krishna's lotus feet with the tears as an offering of his love and surrender. After offering prayers, he circumambulated Krishna, who didn't even speak anything. He was just silent, just holding his yogurt and fruit and rice in his hand. And after taking Krishna's permission, he returned to his abode. Then Yogamaya uncovered the original gopas and calves. who were sitting right in the same place on the bank of the Jamuna. Sanatan Goswami describes like this. Krishna, with his little lump of food in his hand, comes back with all the calves, the original calves. And the gopas, they slept that whole year. But when they woke up, they thought that only a half of a moment passed since Krishna left them to look for the calves. Now, what is a half of a moment? So Krishna came back with the calves, and all the boys were there waiting, and they said, "Krishna, Krishna, you've come back so soon! How could you possibly have come back so soon with all the calves? In your absence, we didn't even have a time to eat one morsel of food. Come, sit down and join us for lunch again." So Krishna sat in the middle of the whirl of the lotus of all the cowherd boys, and they continued laughing and joking and sharing each other's prasad in great happiness. And no one knew that a year had passed. Except Sanatan Goswami explains that all the cowherd boys grew a little, but nobody could notice that. And then they were, evening was coming, and they returned to the village of Braj, and on the way, Krishna was showing them the completely dried up form of Agasura. He dried up for over a year. But to them, it was just a few minutes ago. And all the cowherd boys were so happy to see this big dried up snake. What a beautiful playground. This is the best cave we can play in. And that became a playground in Braj. And then they all returned to the town, to the village of Braj. And they were loudly singing in beautiful poetic songs how today Krishna has killed the big, gigantic, fat snake, Aga! And all the Brijabasis, "Oh, today he has killed Agasura!" And they were very much thrilled to hear this story. Shukadev Goswami tells that anyone who hears this story with a sincere heart, all your spiritual desires will be fulfilled. So here at Chomat, where the great Brahma surrenders with humility and love to Krishna and sees the sweetness of Vrindavan, we should put our head on this dust as well as Brahma did, and we should offer a prayer. Brahma, this Brahma Vimohan Leela, it describes, hearing it overcomes attachment to Karmakanda and Jnanakanda. Practicing spirituality for the purpose of sense gratification or liberation. Trinara pisichena, taror ibasihishnana, amani namana dena kirtaniya sadahari. That is what it is all about. When we were at Govardhan, we heard the story of that Leela. Indra is a great devotee of Krishna. But Krishna, who always protects his devotee, has to smash that pride within our heart. Because false pride contaminates whatever we do. Krishna is not really pleased with any service we do if there is false pride in our heart. But humility melts Krishna's heart. And Lord Brahma, Such an incredible pastime that Lord Krishna performed. So many things he's done at one time. He fulfilled all the desires of the gopis and the cows by being their own child for a year. Also, Krishna enlightened Brahma by removing his false pride. This is how we come to Vrindavan. Don't think you can be a landowner in Vrindavan, or you can have a high position in Vrindavan. I want to be a GBC or a guru or a president or a director of this or a director of that, or I want to make money here, or I want to be a landlord here. This is all illusion. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj told one Babaji who bought a little plot of land, he said, you are in Maya. You think you can own land in Vrindavan? This is Radharani's place. She is Vrindavaneshwari. All the wealth of all the Vaikuntha planets and heavenly planets is not enough to purchase one speck of dust in Braj, because it is Chintamani Dham. Therefore, we find Uddhava wants to be a blade of grass. Brahma and Shiva just want the dust of the feet of the devotees on their heads. And Lord Brahma fell hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times in full prostrations right here in this dust, in utter humility and surrender. He did not want to be. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his Navadvip Dham Mahatmya that Brahma was so ashamed of what he did. He was so humbled. He actually prayed to Krishna that this birth in such a high and powerful position as Brahma is horrible. I want to take the humblest, lowest position. And he performed tapasya in Navadvip. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him because Brahma was worshipping him. Brahma knew that he would be coming in Kali Yuga. And Lord Chaitanya fulfilled his desire. He said, you will fulfill your desire instead of being the topmost worshipped by all the demigods. You will take birth in a Malecha and Yavana family. An outcast, an untouchable. Your name will be Haridas Thakur. And with humility like a blade of grass, with tolerance like a tree, offering all respect to other and expecting none in return, you will constantly chant my holy name. When Lord Chaitanya asked Haridas Thakur, any benediction I'll give you in the house of Srivas. Any benediction I'll give you. Lord Brahma, who learned his lesson really good here in Chomata, what did he ask for? Haridas Thakur said that I'm afraid to ask you for this, but I will because you are forcing me to ask. There is one desire that I have in my heart. That in every birth I may take, let me receive the remnants left on the plate of your devotees. Let me get their remnants. Even if I be a dog or an insect near the house of your devotee, that will be the greatest benediction if I could get the remnants of the food of your Vaishnavas. That is my desire. And then he became ashamed. That who am I, so fallen and insignificant, to ask for such an exalted benediction as that? That is why he is Namacharya. That is why he could chant 300,000 names every day. Trinara Visuni Chena, Taror Ivasehishuna, Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Lord Brahma couldn't care less about Brahmaloka. Here he is praying to be a dog or an insect where he could get the remnants of the food of a Vaishnav. Servant of the servant of the servant. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hearing this genuine humility. And Haridas Thakur, after saying that, he was condemning himself. He's saying, I am so sinful that I think myself so important. But I'm insignificant. Lord Chaitanya was so blissful with tears in his eyes. He said, Haridas, anyone who sees you, anyone who hears your name, anyone who remembers you, I will give them love of Krishna. You will always be in the assemble of my devotees. And wherever people follow in your footsteps, they will attain all perfections in chanting the holy name. So being members of Brahma Sampradaya, let us fall in the dust of this place with our prostrated obeisances and pray for the humility, the tolerance, and the sincerity in which we can please Krishna, actually please Krishna's heart when we chant his names. Panchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindubhya eva cha patithanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Sham. And I am such a demoniac species that we were supposed to leave at 5 o'clock because we are all supposed to be at Krishna Balaram Temple for Damodar Astakam. And it is now 5:11. This human time is such an obstruction. But we'd like to hear a few words from Dinabandhu Prabhu and Jagatarini Mataji, and then we'll all... I want to stay here, but it is our duty to Krishna Balaram to be there tonight. What should we do, Mataji? Huh? Go! She's kicking us out. Okay, so we'll hear from these two wonderful personalities for a couple minutes, and then we'll have a 3-minute ecstatic kirtan. We'll put the energy of 10 hours in 3 minutes, and then we'll run to our buses and go right to Krishna Balaram Temple for Damodarastakam. And tonight for Damodarastakam, it's service to the international community of Vaishnavas that all of you are very, very, very enthusiastic. If you're spontaneously ecstatic, that's wonderful. If you're not, as in austerity. Dance and loudly chant. Is that possible? Thank you very much.